My name is Chandra Blackwell. I am 40 years old. Today is September 13th, 2010. I am in Kansas City, Missouri, and I am talking to my mother.
My name is Nadine Blackwell. I was 80 on August 18th this year. Today's date is September 13th, 2010. Location is Kansas City, Missouri. Relationship to my partner, she's my daughter, my youngest daughter.
One thing I wanted to talk about, because you just turned 80, and you spent all of those 80 years in Topeka, Kansas, which doesn't sound like a very exciting place to most people, and it certainly wasn't to me when I was growing up, but you were actually involved in a lot of things that, since I've become an adult, I actually realize are really, really awesome and really, really interesting. One of those things is that your family was really heavily involved with Brown versus Topeka Board of Education, the civil rights case in 1954. So talk about your involvement with that.
Well, my uncle, McKinley Burnett, was president of the NAACP during those years, from about 1950, in the 50s into the 60s. And we had four black grade schools at that time. They were, the one in East Topeka was Washington, the one in South Topeka was Monroe, West Topeka was Buchanan, and North Topeka was McKinley. And in when I first started the school, we went the first grade through the eighth grade, and then the ninth grade to junior high school, and then the 10th through 12th. At Topeka High. And the year that I entered in the seventh grade was the first year that they allowed blacks to go to junior high school in the seventh grade. And McFarland was the superintendent of schools. He brought with him a black man named Harrison Caldwell and made him superintendent of all the black children in all the grade school, junior high school, and high school. I feel like that we were more segregated at that point than we had ever been before. We did go to the same, especially when we got to high school, but we had a club that we went to, the youth club. The Downbeat was at Monroe School, and the Clock was at McKinley in North Topeka. We also had a separate basketball team. We could participate in track. That was the one thing that they did allow blacks and whites to participate in. But the Ramblers, we traveled and
A basketball team?
It was a basketball team. And we traveled and we went to like Fort Scott, Coffeyville, Kansas City, just around the area and played other black teams.
Nadine, I'm wondering, did you, when you entered seventh grade or when you were playing on the basketball team, did you have a sense that you were segregated, or how did you understand it when you were that age, what was happening to you?
Well, yeah, I knew I was segregated. You were taught that, you know, that you were who you were, and you had to go above and beyond to get anywhere in this life. So, yes, we definitely knew that. And by going to junior high school in the seventh grade, that was a step up. It didn't open the schools because that was like about 1942. In other words, the schools were the legislation wasn't passed until 1954.
So were you nervous when you entered the seventh? Was there anything that was scary or nervous?
No, not really. My friends were there and all, so it was okay. There wasn't a lot of problems with that at all. I know some of the schools when they were integrated in the South, because naturally I've read about it, you know, where there was true problems, but in Topeka it really wasn't. After 1954, even after they passed the legislation, we were still separate because of the housing, the neighborhood. kept the school separate. So that was just a beginning. My other daughter, Pamela, she was three, and we were not satisfied with things the way they were. That would have been about 1964. We picketed the school board several days a week, she and I, along with others. things are better. Well, for instance, even after we got to high school, we went to class together, but when we had our parties, the black kids had their parties up in the music room, and the white kids had their parties in the cafeteria. And during the all-school party, we had a black king and queen and a white king and queen. The white king and queen would go up and dance at our party in the music room. The black king and queen would come down and dance with the white children in the cafeteria. It just, it was separate. It was, we were together, but we were not together. So, and it has improved over the years so that now we don't think too much about, you know, it's still separate in a way because of the neighborhoods, but we have made progress, let's say it that way.
Well, now, what involvement did McKinley Burnett have specifically, your uncle? He was the president of the NAACP.
Yes, he was president of the NAACP. He was the one who saw to it that the case was filed against the school board. In fact, they didn't want him to do it. Some of the people there told him that if he didn't file the case, he had five children. They would see that his five children got a real good education.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the main thing, is that he's the one that was the basis of filing the case and seeing that it was done.
And then Vicky, your cousin, was one of the plaintiffs?
Yes, she was one of the plaintiffs. My father's sister, Maud Esther Lawton, was one of the plaintiffs, and for her daughter, Vicky, that was involved in that.
Okay, well, is there anything else you want to say about that particular?
Well,
I'm wondering, so let's pretend we're talking to aliens here and they have no idea what Brown versus the Board of Education is. What is that case? What did it mean? What happened because of it?
Brown versus Education forced the school board or the school district 501 to open the schools to all students regardless. In other words, you went to the school in your neighborhood. When they had the four black grade schools, of course, you had to be bused. Some of those kids were bused, you know, halfway across town. And so it opened the way for total integration. Now, like I say, at this point, it's still segregated some because of housing, but.
But it was a federal
case. Yes.
I mean, eventually went to the.
Yeah, right. It went to the Supreme Court, and the court ruled in our favor.
It's all started in Topeka.
Yes.
So did you, your uncle was the person who filed?
He was the force behind filing. The force behind filing. It was, he saw to it, the lawyers, of course, were from Topeka, mm-hmm. and he saw to it that the case was filed.
So is this something that was talked about in your home over Sunday dinners, or were your parents talking about it?
Well, no.
What were your memories?
My memories of it, it was, I knew it was happening, but I had no idea that it was the event that it was. I just did not.
So what were your memories? What do you remember about that time?
Well, just that that the case had been filed, and like I said, I didn't realize it was important. You know, I was a child. It didn't mean that much to me at that point. It's only been in later years, looking back over the years and what has happened, that we were making history and I had no idea we were.
I think that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
Because if you set out to make history, you usually just fizzle.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Another experience that you have talked a lot about is the integration of the Topeka Fire Department, because my father, your husband, was a fireman in Topeka for a lot of years. So do you want to talk a little bit about how the integration of the fire department?
Yes, they integrated the fire department in about 1962. When I got married in 1951, my husband was a fireman, and he was at the all-black station at 3rd and Jefferson. They had two shifts, which would have been, maybe 16 to 18 black firemen that worked on each shift. In fact, his brother was a fireman, too. They did not let them work on the same shift because of the danger, so they were always on opposite shifts. That when they actually integrated, they didn't talk about it an awful lot. But when they were actually integrated, what they did was they put two black firemen at each station working opposite shifts to one another, so that it really...
So each black fireman was basically by himself, with the white fireman.
And they shared a bed. That was one of the thoughts behind it, that they could not sleep, that a white fireman would not sleep behind a black fireman. Of course, the black firemen were grateful for that, because they didn't want to sleep after the white fireman.
Well, you know what? This gives me a little perspective on a moment that I had with my dad, whom I call Bertram. So he had come to visit me in Atlanta, and I was telling him about a friend I'd recently gone to visit, a white girl that I was friends with, and I went to visit her, and I said, you know, I felt really bad because she put me in her bed, and she scrunched up on the love seat in her living room for the whole time I was there, and the fact that a white girl gave me her bed made him cry. And now it adds a little perspective when you talk about, you know, that situation and how big of a deal it was to, you know, share your bed with somebody of a different race.
Yeah. They, actually, when they did that, it really kind of left each fireman very lonely and to himself. And they did then have to put up with stuff that people did to them and was kind of shunned. They weren't taken in right away, you know. After they integrated, he made inspector. And he was inspector for several years, and he was the first black inspector there in Topeka. And then, of course, he made assistant fire chief, and he had that job for several years before he retired. Then in about 19, when was Joe? I think Joe was about 1968.
That Joe Douglas was fire chief.
Yes, let me see. I've got it here somewhere. Let me see what that is. He was fire chief from 1983 to 1989.
Oh, okay.
And I talked to him a little bit. He came over the other evening, and I kind of talked to him because, you know, at this age, my memory is a little shaky at times, and I wasn't remembering everything. But he said that he felt like that they were just thrown out there, and no one was monitoring it to see that things were going like they were supposed to go. But eventually it worked itself around that he made some very good friends. So did your father. He made some very good friends. And before he died, of course, before he retired, it had worked out pretty well. What that did do, however, there are fewer black firemen on the fire department at this point. Because for some reason or another, they just don't, or they haven't there in Topeka. I think we maybe have four or five at this point, but not very many. And you see, we had like 16, 18.
Well, do you think that's because there was, at that time, a black fire station that needed to be staffed, so that was
right.
where people knew they
right.
could, black people
right.
knew they could work?
Right, that's right.
Whereas maybe they wouldn't have wanted to be in the fire department if it hadn't been like
right.
that.
Right. And it was the camaraderie was just excellent between them. I mean, you know, we had a good time together at work, away from work even. We all associated together.
So that changed when the department
was
integrated?
It certainly did, yes. It threw them so that we didn't get to see one another like we used to.
So what do you think it was that Bertram did to make friends so easily? I mean, maybe it wasn't easy, but I know he had an easier time than other people.
Have you ever known your father to meet a stranger? You know that.
Yes, you always say my father and I love riffraff.
Yeah. You remember the time that we went to the, it was in Winchester, Virginia, when your brother Garland was there,
mm-hmm.
and they had the fire trucks from all over the eastern seaboard, and he wanted his dad to see it, so he invited us up, and he had a seat for us in the viewer section, and Garland and I sat down, and your dad got up and went on down, and Garland said, "Now just look at him." He was shaking hands and introducing himself to people all down the row.
He passed away in 1996, by the way. I believe that, actually. And I think his cooking could have helped him out, too,
yes,
in that regard.
Yes. He never met a stranger.
Anything else you want to say about that?
No, I think that's about it on that
subject. Few questions, if that's okay.
All right.
So this might be a kind of stupid question, but so what was the thought behind originally having a black fire station and a white fire station, that the black fire station would only put out black people's fires, or was
no.
it integrated how they fire?
Yes, they would. The as far as where they had a certain section of town, and the main section they had was the downtown. So no. They were each fire station was assigned a certain section of the city. It just so happened that they were all at one station. There was a saying that there was a lady that they were handy with their axes, and there was a lady saying when she saw the black fire department coming, she said, "Just let it burn down. Don't chop it down."
I never knew that one.
So
your husband, what was your husband's name?
Albert Blackwell was my husband. I didn't say his name, did I?
No.
Yeah, Albert Blackwell. Uh-huh.
I called him Bertram because of a game we used to play where he was my butler when I was a little girl and my chauffeur.
And so what did he, do you remember having conversations with him about the integration of the fire department?
Well, when he first went to the station, yes, because he was a little unhappy with some of the treatment that he got. But he was the type of person that never met a stranger and was soon, he integrated himself. That was just his personality.
Well, now, I can remember when I was little, Pam or someone saying something about how Ebony Magazine or someone had wanted to interview him about something to do with the fire department, and he said no. Did she just make that up?
I don't know. I've never heard. I hadn't heard that one.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if it was because he was the first black fire inspector.
It could have been
Topeka or something.
As I told you, my memory is.
Well, and back when people were talking about this stuff, I didn't care. So
yeah, yeah,
so
right,
I don't really remember
right.
That
no,
much.
I don't remember that much either on that one.
Okay.
So can you describe your husband, Nadine, or describe your dad more for me, Chanda?
Well, he was just really jolly. Not that he didn't ever get in a bad mood, but my mom is right. He never, ever met a stranger. And he came to visit me in Atlanta. I was working at a restaurant that had a terrace that was right on the sidewalk. And the waiters, he made friends with everyone I worked with, every single person I worked with, and shook everyone's hand in the kitchen and everywhere. And but the guys that would work with us sort of made it their unofficial responsibility to keep homeless people away from the people who were eating on the terrace because it was just a little railing and then the sidewalk. And if a homeless person quite often saw people, like, dressed up really fancy to go to the show, he got the idea that he could intimidate them just by walking up there because they probably would just be like, oh, get away, and then step away and he could have their food or, you know, whatever. And they had quite a problem with my dad because they would come running out there to get the guys away. And my dad had like a whole club of homeless guys because he was giving them cigarettes and chatting them up. The guys, then the homeless men would just refuse to leave because they would say, I'm talking to my friend. So he would talk to absolutely anyone and everyone. And, you know, I think he liked some people better than others, but I think that he was really good at making people feel at home.
He was just a people person.
And comfortable.
He really was. He was a people person. And
he liked
I was
to cook for a lot of people.
Yes, I was not when we got married, but I learned to like people because he was always bringing somebody home that I didn't know anything about. So
now, is it true that he brought Count Basie home, or is that something he just made up?
No,
he did make up stories.
No, he did. He did. He did bring Count Basie home.
Okay.
He sure did.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to know that's true.
Yes, yes.
How did that happen?
Well, he went to
the
concert. No, he went to the concert that Count Basie was giving there. And made himself agreeable, and he brought them home and fed them. He did, because he learned to. His mother taught him how to cook, and of course they cooked at the fire station. And so when I went to work in what year did I go to work? I forgot.
60 something.
Yeah, let's see, 30, about 66. When I went to work, I made it that he would do the cooking and I would do everything else. So he did. And so Pamela and Garland and Jancy and Chandra, all of you, expected your father to cook, not me.
That's true. And he did a good job.
Yeah.
And there was something else that I was thinking about with regard to him. Oh, when I used to go to, I love parades, probably because of him, but whenever we went to a parade, St. Patrick's Day or Thanksgiving or anything that happened in Topeka, always at least a dozen people in the parade would turn and be like, hi, Al.
Everybody knew him.
Yep.
Everybody knew him. Yeah.
So what was his, and we talked about this a little bit already, but what was his role in the integration of the fire department then?
He was the first black fire inspector and the first black assistant fire chief.
And that all occurred after integration.
Integration,
and I
yes.
think one of the things with integration that maybe splintered the relationships with the black firemen previously had was that some of them, like my dad, were being promoted up the ranks and others weren't. And suddenly they were on these uneven playing fields when they had previously
mm-hmm.
been
yes.
sort of all one big happy
family.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So I think that was probably hard for him because
it was
he
hard
loved
for
to
him.
Be loved.
He loved to be loved. Yes. That's
so.
True. Okay.
And then the third thing that I wanted to talk about was your experience with Bertram helping to integrate the downtown restaurants.
Okay. Well, it was in 1950 before we married. We were dating. And he told me he had a surprise, and
he
didn't tell me what the surprise was. And we went downtown to Kansas Avenue, which is the main downtown street of Topeka, and parked a car in the 600 block, or I believe it was the 600 block. The creamery's gone now. Anyway, he opened the door, and we started to go in, and I stopped and said, I'm not going in there.
Because it was a segregated.
Because it
weren't.
Was a white restaurant. Mm-hmm. And he said, now you are going in there. Don't embarrass me. Let's go. So I went in and we sat down. And I was very, very nervous and upset. But I tried to do what he asked. And they did serve us. He knew the cook there. Was a man by the name of Coleman Kirkdall. And Coleman had told him, well, just come on in. see if they will serve you. He said, I'm the main cook. If they don't serve you, I'm going out the back door. They'll not have a cook for the rest of the evening. And they did serve us. We had a nice dinner. And as I'm saying, I didn't enjoy it because I was too nervous to enjoy it, because I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. And then someone got word to us that they thought if we went to the ranch house, which was on 6th and Gage, that they would serve us there. We went, they served us, and then in that case, we told our friends, and I had forgotten it, but Joe reminded me the other night that we had taken he and Nafla with us when we went out the next time. And also, there was another place in the Jayhawk Hotel. It was called the Purple Cow. And we heard that we could go there. Just, I don't know who your father talked to, but he talked to some people. And we went there, and they served us. And then we told everybody else about it. And gradually, now not those three restaurants we could go to. And gradually, the restaurants opened. I think it's interesting that the one that would not serve blacks was the Jolly Cafe, which was run by Chinese. They never, ever opened to blacks. They simply closed their doors and went out of business. They never, ever served blacks. But now, I hadn't thought about that in years, because we can go to, you know, to mm-hmm. any restaurant, do anything we want to do. So we did integrate the restaurants there in Topeka.
So when you were doing that, either you two alone or with Nathalie and Joe, what were the other people around you doing, the other customers at the restaurant,
well,
or the waiter even?
Looking at us, and when we went to the creamery, most of the blacks were in the kitchen, and everybody was in the door looking at us.
All the kitchen staff.
All the kitchen staff.
I can't believe they're here.
So it was interesting, but like I say, it's we did open the restaurants there in Topeka.
Was it posted that, how did you know it was segregated still? Was it something that was just a remnant of how
no,
people
it's just,
or was it posted
no,
somewhere?
No, it really wasn't posted now. But if you went in and you weren't supposed to be served, they would tell you, we don't serve blacks here. Or they didn't say blacks, they said Negroes. We don't serve in those days. We don't serve you. Well, I can tell an incident of where my mother... we had gone to Kansas City, and we were on our way home, and we were hungry. And it was late, and there weren't a lot of restaurants open. And so we stopped at this one restaurant, and she went in. We all stayed in the car. And when she came out, now they did put it in a sack, but a lot of them wouldn't even do that. They just would not serve you. She went in, and someone, the proprietor, whoever, told her, we don't serve blacks here. And she told him, I don't blame you. I wouldn't either. I'll have such and such and such a thing. And so they did serve her and was to go. Now, I know in the South that they had a lot of signs that said, you know, blacks not served here or in the rear or something like that. But in Topeka, it was not like that. The signs weren't there particularly, but you just knew that you weren't supposed to go in. And if you did and you weren't supposed to go in, they wouldn't serve you. That's all it was to that.
So did you ever ask your husband what gave you the idea to just start, or gave him the idea?
I think Coleman did. I think Coleman told him, you come, and if they don't serve you, I'm going to go out the back door, and they won't be serving anybody because he was the only cook. So I don't know whether he had talked to the owner ahead of time. I'm assuming he probably did. But we never did really discuss that. But I'm sure that this is why we did go, was because Coleman had told him to come in and see if they would serve us, and they did.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, all right.
And, you know, as somebody who was born in 1970, I didn't have to worry about,
well, that's true.
You know, any
that's
of
true.
That stuff.
By the time you came along, it was a different story.
Well,
I I have another question, if it's okay about
that. Fine with me.
So you mentioned with Brown versus the Board of Education, you had no idea that you were making history as you were doing it.
Yeah.
With you and your husband going into the restaurants in downtown Topeka, did you have the sense that you were making history a little bit, or what?
No, and I still don't feel that we did, because most people have no idea how the restaurants were opened.
Oh,
well, no, they don't. I don't talk about it.
Just they got word.
They just got word
that
it was okay to go. I don't think they had any idea that my husband and I are the ones that went first, and you know, and so as a test case, so to speak. And so, I definitely didn't have a sense of history there. I just, even though I was grown, it just never crossed my mind.
In talking about it now, do you feel like you made history?
Well, I know I've made history when I talk about it now, because there was, like I say, there was a time when you couldn't go, and now you don't think anything about it. You know, you couldn't stay in hotels, you couldn't go to restaurants, you couldn't do hardly anything. Now, one of the things, there's good and bad about all things. Segregation had its good points in that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, when I was coming along, that village was your relatives, your teachers, your church, whatever. I could do something that I wasn't supposed to do, and by the time I got home, my mother knew about it. I mean, you know, it just, the closeness that we had when we went to a convention, for instance. I was a teenager when we went
to church convention.
We went to Washington, D.C. We stayed in the homes of other blacks because we couldn't stay at the hotels. And you made close friends. The lady that kept us, I wrote to her for years, you know. It just was, there was a closeness that we don't have now. That's all I can say about that.
I can agree with that. I experienced a little bit of it just because you still have a lot of friends in Topeka, and I can remember when I first started learning how to drive, my brother, who's 13 years older, took me out to practice, and somebody got back to you that they saw me with the boy in the car. And I almost got in trouble before the whole situation was. So I always felt like I was being watched.
You were.
By black people in Topeka.
You were. So. And that's not a bad thing, because
no.
That closeness is not there now. And so many of the kids get into trouble because their parents have no idea what they're doing and all. Like I say, there's good and bad in most things, and that was the good in that you were in a community and they kind of surrounded you.
Mm-hmm. I can agree with that. Well, now, I know we don't have a lot of time left, so I'll skip some of my questions, but I have to ask you, in light of everything we've been talking about, what you were thinking when you found out that I was planning to marry a white man, which I did. I mean, what did you think it was going to be like for us?
I didn't think anything about it. I expected it. You were different from your, Jancy was, 17 years older, Garland was 13 years older, and Pam was 9,
mm-hmm.
or 8 and a half when you were born. And I raised them entirely different from what I raised you, because they came along when we still were pretty segregated. By the time you came along, we were not. And you always were very cosmopolitan.
I am my father.
You are your father, and it was just people to you. If you would say about a certain friend, and I would say, are they black or white? And you would say, Mama, they're black or they're white. But what difference does it make? They're my friends. And so, you know, you looked at things differently. And that's the reason that I was willing to send you to Spelman, was because Yvonne, you know, Jance's sister, she was counselor at Sumner.
Mm-hmm.
And before she talked to me, I wouldn't have considered sending you to a black school. I was being prejudiced, I guess. I didn't feel like they were that good. But she said to me, especially Spelman, she says, it's an excellent school. She'll get a good education. And she will when she graduates, by that time, she will know who she is, because right now she does not. Now that's what she's saying. So, but you were always, the people were just people to you. So I know that you, well, I just wasn't surprised that you married Matt when you did.
Oh, so you didn't. I know that your friends have commented that we go out and we're awfully social for a mixed couple.
Yes,
and
you are.
It surprises them. Because in your day, if somebody did, well, it wasn't legal, but if somebody was even together romantically, they wouldn't let people know.
Yes, and if it had been earlier, I would have had more to say about it, because I would have felt like that marriage in itself is a hard road to hoe, you know, and you really have to be dedicated for it to last and for it to take. And that just added, when you married out of your race, it simply added more to it. I'd have had more to say, but I was okay with you marrying Matt, because I felt like things had changed enough that it probably would work out okay, and it has. And yes, usually when you do that, when you marry out of your race, you are isolated. Marcia's a good example of that, you know, when she married Robert. And she to this day is isolated. Yeah, it's a cousin that we have that married out of her race. But
she's 50, she's almost 60, isn't she?
Yes, she is 60. She is 60. Okay. So it makes a difference that it when they married, it was a different time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, since we have only a couple of minutes left, is there anything that you want to say to Augie, who is Matt's and my child, or to Adrian and Ariana, who are my sister's children with her husband who's from Nigeria?
Yeah, well, I want to say that always love your family, because your family will take care of you when nobody else will. You may fall out with your family, but you always make it up again. You don't stay angry, because they will do for you when no one else will. Also, my mother's saying was, and that's for you and everybody else, for my grandchildren and for my children, is that, it's going out of my head just like that.
Your mother used to say,
you can be content with anything, with whatever happens to you in life. You can make yourself content. It's all left up to you.
Well, thank you. And thank you for doing this with me, because I know you didn't want to.
No, I didn't.
I just want to say thank you and that I love you.
I love you too. That's why I did it.
We have just about 2 minutes left, and I had another question.
Okay.
Too, and I'm wondering, Chandra, what have you learned from your mother and from your father and from this Topeka heritage?
Well, you know, really not a lot, because I didn't really appreciate it until I was a grown person. I guess what I appreciate most is, you know, you always take your parents for granted, no matter who you are and no matter who they are. You never really know everything that they go through to make sure that you're healthy and happy. And but, you know, in this case, when I look back at all the things that they took part in and all the things that they did to change society so that I could grow up being, you know, the flighty, free-spirited, everybody's everybody, the person that I am, I have more appreciation than just, you know, the day-to-day stuff that they did. They, you know, fed me and they were nice to me. And, you know, I have even more appreciation because they were doing a lot more than that before I even got here behind the scenes, that changed the quality of my life as a black person and not just as a person growing up.
Yeah, we moved to a white neighborhood where we were the only black family there, and it made for a difference with you children, especially in school and things like that. Garland did all right with it, but he was one of the first ones, and he was a little unhappy behind it, you know. So,
mm-hmm. Whereas I didn't give it a second thought.
No, you didn't, but he did. Uh-huh.
And I'm wondering, too, Nadine, is if in talking about all this history and this history that you helped make and in the civil rights movement in our country, is what is it like when you look at your daughter across the table and talk about your past and your history and see your daughter and your grandchildren and the future they have?
Well, I feel like that I have made some things possible for her to have the life that she has had. And I feel like as time goes on, America probably will get where it's supposed to go. I think that we will, one of these days, be truly integrated. And I don't know that it's going to be in your lifetime or even Augie's lifetime, but I do feel that we are going to get there.
Well, now I feel like, you know, when you always used to ask if somebody was black or white, and I would think, you know, I might have brushed you off, but I still notice, like, I notice mixed couples in the grocery store. I notice things, you know, and I guess people in your generation would have disapproved. I just notice. But I think maybe by the time Augie grows up, it won't even be a blip on his radar because he's two.
Yeah.
So, but I see it and I notice it, whereas I think people younger than me don't even notice.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to share today before we close?
I think I'm done.
Yeah, I think I am too.
Well, are you glad you did it?
Yes, I am. I'm glad I did it.
Your children are very wise, Nadine.
Yes, I do know. I'm proud of my children.
My name is Chandra Blackwell. I am 40 years old. Today is September 13th, 2010. I am in Kansas City, Missouri, and I am talking to my mother.
My name is Nadine Blackwell. I was 80 on August 18th this year. Today's date is September 13th, 2010. Location is Kansas City, Missouri. Relationship to my partner, she's my daughter, my youngest daughter.
One thing I wanted to talk about, because you just turned 80, and you spent all of those 80 years in Topeka, Kansas, which doesn't sound like a very exciting place to most people, and it certainly wasn't to me when I was growing up, but you were actually involved in a lot of things that, since I've become an adult, I actually realize are really, really awesome and really, really interesting. One of those things is that your family was really heavily involved with Brown versus Topeka Board of Education, the civil rights case in 1954. So talk about your involvement with that.
Well, my uncle, McKinley Burnett, was president of the NAACP during those years, from about 1950, in the 50s into the 60s. And we had four black grade schools at that time. They were, the one in East Topeka was Washington, the one in South Topeka was Monroe, West Topeka was Buchanan, and North Topeka was McKinley. And when I first started to school, we went the first grade through the eighth grade, and then the ninth grade to junior high school, and then the 10th through 12th at Topeka High. And the year that I entered in the seventh grade was the first year that they allowed blacks to go to junior high school in the seventh grade. And McFarland was the superintendent of schools. He brought with him a black man named Harrison Caldwell and made him, superintendent of all the black children in all the grade school, junior high school, and high school. I feel like that we were more segregated at that point than we had ever been before. We did go to the same, especially when we got to high school, but we had a club that we went to, the youth club. The downbeat was at Monroe School, and the clock was at McKinley. in North Topeka. We also had a separate basketball team. We could participate in track. That was the one thing that they did allow blacks and whites to participate in. But the Ramblers, we traveled and
A basketball team?
It was a basketball team. And we traveled and we went to like Fort Scott, Coffeyville, Kansas City, just around the area and played other black teams.
Nadine, I'm wondering, when you entered seventh grade or when you were playing on the basketball team, did you have a sense that you were segregated, or how did you understand it when you were that age, what was happening to you?
Well, yeah, I knew I was segregated. You were taught that, you know, that you were who you were, and you had to go above and beyond to get anywhere in this life. So, yes, we definitely knew that. And by going to junior high school in the seventh grade, that was a step up. It didn't open the schools because that was like about 1942. In other words, the schools were the legislation wasn't passed until 1954.
So were you nervous when you entered the seventh? Was there anything that was scary or nervous?
No, not really. My friends were there and all, so it was okay. There wasn't a lot of problems with that at all. I know some of the schools, when they were integrated in the South, because naturally I've read about it, you know, where there was true problems, but in Topeka it really wasn't. After 1954, even after they passed the legislation, we were still separate. Because of the housing, the neighborhood kept the school separate. So that was just a beginning. My other daughter, Pamela, she was three, and we were not satisfied with things the way they were. That would have been about 1964. We picketed the school board several days a week, she and I, along with others. things are better. Well, for instance, even after we got to high school, we went to class together. But when we had our parties, the black kids had their parties up in the music room, and the white kids had their parties in the cafeteria. And during the all-school party, we had a black king and queen and a white king and queen. The white king and queen would go up and dance at our party in the music room. The black king and queen would come down and dance with the white children in the cafeteria. It was separate. We were together, but we were not together. So, and it has improved over the years so that now we don't think too much about, you know, it's still separate in a way because of the neighborhoods, but we have made progress, let's say it that way.
Well, now, what involvement did McKinley Burnett have specifically, your uncle? He was the president of the NAACP.
Yes, he was president of the NAACP. He was the one who saw to it that the case was filed against the school board. In fact, they didn't want him to do it. Some of the people there told him that if he didn't file the case, he had five children. They would see that his five children got a real good education.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the main thing, is that he's the one that was the basis of filing the case and seeing that it was done.
And then Vicky, your cousin, was one of the plaintiffs?
Yes, she was one of the plaintiffs. My father's sister, Maud Esther Lawton, was one of the plaintiffs, and for her daughter, Vicky, that was involved in that.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to say about that particular?
Well,
I'm wondering, so let's pretend we're talking to aliens here and they have no idea what Brown versus the Board of Education is. What is that case? What did it mean? What happened because of it?
Brown versus Education forced the school board or the school district 501 to open the schools to all students regardless. In other words, you went to the school in your neighborhood. When they had the four black grade schools, of course, you had to be bused. Some of those kids were bused, you know, halfway across town. And so it opened the way for total integration. Now, like I say, at this point, it's still segregated some because of housing, but
it was a federal
case. Yes,
I mean, eventually went to the
It went to the Supreme Court, and the court ruled in our favor.
And it's all started in Topeka.
Yes.
So did you, your uncle was the person who filed?
He was the force behind filing. The force behind filing. It was, he saw to it, the lawyers, of course, were from Topeka, mm-hmm. and he saw to it that the case was filed.
So is this something that was talked about in your home over Sunday dinners, or were your parents talking about it?
Well, no.
What were your memories?
My memories of it, I knew it was happening, but I had no idea that it was the event that it was. I just did not.
So what were your memories? What do you remember about that time?
Well, just that that the case had been filed, and like I said, I didn't realize it was important. You know, I was a child. It didn't mean that much to me at that point. It's only been in later years, looking back over the years and what has happened, that we were making history, and I had no idea we were.
I think that's usually how it goes.
Yeah.
Because if you set out to make history, you usually just fizzle.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
Another experience that you have talked a lot about is the integration of the Topeka Fire Department, because my father, your husband, was a fireman in Topeka for a lot of years. So do you want to talk a little bit about how the integration of the fire department?
Yes, they integrated the fire department in about 1962. When I got married in 1951, my husband was a fireman, and he was at the all-black station at 3rd and Jefferson. They had two shifts, which would have been, maybe 16 to 18 black firemen that worked on each shift. In fact, his brother was a fireman, too. They did not let them work on the same shift because of the danger, so they were always on opposite shifts. That when they actually integrated, they didn't talk about it an awful lot. But when they were actually integrated, what they did was they put two black firemen at each station working opposite shifts to one another, so that it really...
So each black fireman was basically by himself, with the white fireman.
And they shared a bed. That was one of the thoughts behind it, that they could not sleep, that a white fireman would not sleep behind a black fireman. Of course, the black firemen were grateful for that, because they didn't want to sleep after the white fireman. So,
well, you know what? This gives me a little perspective on a moment that I had with my dad, whom I call Bertram. So he had come to visit me in Atlanta, and I was telling him about a friend I'd recently gone to visit, a white girl that I was friends with, and I went to visit her, and I said, you know, I felt really bad because she put me in her bed, and she scrunched up on the love seat in her living room for the whole time I was there, and the fact that a white girl gave me her bed made him cry. And now it adds a little perspective when you talk about, you know, that situation and how big of a deal it was to, you know, share your bed with somebody of a different race.
Yeah. They, actually, when they did that, it really kind of left each fireman very lonely. and to himself. And they did then have to put up with stuff that people did to them and was kind of shunned. They weren't taken in right away. You know, it. He made, when after they integrated, he made inspector. And he was inspector for several years. And he was the first black inspector there in Topeka. And then, of course, he made first assistant fire chief. And he had that job for several years before he retired. Then in about 19, when was Joe? I think Joe was about 1968. Let me see here.
That Joe Douglas was fire chief.
Yes, let me see. I've got it here somewhere. Let me see what that is. He was fire chief from 1983 to 1989.
Oh, okay.
And I talked to him a little bit. He came over the other evening, and I kind of talked to him because, you know, at this age, my memory is a little shaky at times, and yeah. I wasn't remembering everything, but he said that he felt like that they were just thrown out there, and no one was monitoring it to see that things were going like they were supposed to go, but eventually it worked itself around that he made some very good friends. So did your father. He made some very good friends, and before he died, of course, before he retired, it had worked out pretty well. What that did do, however, there are fewer black firemen on the fire department at this point because for some reason or another, they just don't, or they haven't there in Topeka. I think we maybe have four or five at this point, but not very many. And you see, we had like 16, 18.
Well, do you think that's because there was, at that time, a black fire station that needed to be staffed, so that was
right.
where people knew they
right.
could, black people
right.
knew they could work.
Right, that's right.
Whereas maybe they wouldn't have wanted to be in the fire department if it hadn't been like
right.
that.
Right, and it was the camaraderie was just excellent between them. I mean, you know, we had a good time together at work, away from work even. We all associated together.
So that changed when the department
it
was
certainly
integrated.
Did, yes. It threw them so that we didn't get to see one another like we used to.
So what do you think it was that Bertram did to make friends so easily? I mean, maybe it wasn't easy, but I know he had an easier time than other people.
Have you ever known your father to meet a stranger? You know that.
Yes, you always say my father and I love riffraff.
Yes. You remember the time that we went to it was in Winchester, Virginia, when your brother Garland was there,
mm-hmm.
and they had the fire trucks from all over the eastern seaboard, and he wanted his dad to see it, so he invited us up, and he had a seat for us in the viewer section, and Garland and I sat down, and your dad got up and went on down, and Garland said, "Now just look at him." He was shaking hands and introducing himself to the people all down the row.
he passed away in 1996, by the way. Yeah, I believe that, actually. And I think his cooking could have helped him out, too,
yes,
in that regard.
Yes, he never met a stranger.
Anything else you want to say about that?
No, I think that's about it on that
subject. I have a few questions, if that's okay.
All right.
So, this might be a kind of a stupid question, but so what was the thought behind originally having a black fire station and a white fire station, that the black fire station would only put out black people's fires, or was
no.
it integrated how they
yes,
fire?
It would the as far as where they had a certain section of town, and the main section they had was the downtown. So no. They were each fire station was assigned a certain section of the city. It just so happened that that they were all at one station. There was a saying that there was a lady that they were handy with their axes, and there was a lady saying when she saw the black fire department coming, she said, "Just let it burn down. Don't chop it down."
I never knew that one.
So
your husband, what was your husband's name?
Albert Blackwell was my husband. I didn't say his name, did I?
No.
Yeah, Albert Blackwell.
I called him Bertram because of a game we used to play where he was my butler when I was a little girl and my chauffeur.
And so what did he, do you remember having conversations with him about the integration of the fire department?
Well, when he first went to the station, yes, because he was a little unhappy with some of the treatment that he got. But he was the type of person that never met a stranger and was soon, he integrated himself. That was just his personality.
Well, now, I can remember when I was little, Pam or someone saying something about how Ebony Magazine or someone had wanted to interview him about something to do with the fire department, and he said no. Did she just make that up?
I don't know. I hadn't heard that one.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if it was because he was the first black fire inspector
it could have been.
Topeka or something.
As I told you, my memory is...
Well, and back when people were talking about this stuff, I didn't care. So
yeah, yeah,
so
right,
I don't really remember
right.
that
no,
much.
No, I don't remember that much either on that one.
Okay.
So can you describe your husband, Nadine, or describe your dad more for me, Chandra?
Well, he was just really jolly. Not that he didn't ever get in a bad mood, but my mom is right. He never, ever met a stranger. And he came to visit me in Atlanta. I was working at a restaurant that had a terrace that was right on the sidewalk. And the waiters, he made friends with everyone I worked with, every single person I worked with, and shook everyone's hand in the kitchen and everywhere. And but the guys that would work with us sort of made it their unofficial responsibility to keep homeless people away from the people who were eating on the terrace, because it was just a little railing and then the sidewalk. And if a homeless person quite often saw people like dressed up really fancy to go to the show, he got the idea that he could intimidate them just by walking up there, because they probably would just be like, "Oh, get away," and then step away and he could have their food or, you know, whatever. And they had quite a problem with my dad, because they would come running out there to get the guys away. And my dad had like a whole club of homeless guys, because he was giving them cigarettes and chatting them off. The guys, then the homeless men would just refuse to leave, because they would say, "I'm talking to my friend." So he would talk to absolutely anyone and everyone. And, you know, I think he liked some people better than others, but I think that he was really good at making people feel
at home. He was just a people person.
And comfortable.
He really was. He was a people person. And
he liked
I was
to cook for a lot of people.
Yes, I was not when we got married, but I learned to like people, because he was always bringing somebody home that I didn't know anything about. So
now, is it true that he brought Count Basie home, or is that something he just made up? Because
no,
he did make up stories.
No, he did. He did. He did bring Count Basie home.
Okay.
He sure did.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to know that's true.
Yes, yes.
How did that happen?
Well, he went to
the
concert. No, he went to the concert that Count Basie was giving there and made himself agreeable. And he brought them home and fed them. He did. Because he learned to, his mother taught him how to cook. And, of course, they cooked at the fire station. And so when I went to work in, what year did I go to work? I forgot.
60-something?
Yeah, let's see, about 66. When I went to work, I made it that he would do the cooking and I would do everything else. So he did. And so Pamela and Garland and Jancy and Chandra, all of you, expected your father to cook, not me.
That's true. And he did a good job.
Yeah.
And there was something else that I was thinking about with regard to him. Oh, when I used to go to, I love parades, probably because of him, but whenever we went to a parade, St. Patrick's Day or Thanksgiving or anything that happened in Topeka, always at least a dozen people in the parade would turn and be like, "Hi, Al."
Everybody knew him.
Yep.
Everybody knew him. Yeah.
So what was his, and we talked about this a little bit already, but what was his role in the integration of the fire department then?
He was the first black fire inspector and the first black assistant fire chief.
And that all occurred after integration.
Integration,
and I
yes.
think one of the things with integration that maybe splintered the relationships with the black firemen previously had was that some of them, like my dad, were being promoted up the ranks and others weren't, and suddenly they were on these uneven playing fields when they had previously
mm-hmm.
been
yes.
sort of all one big
happy family.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So I think that was probably hard for him because
it was
he
hard
loved
for
to
him.
Be loved.
He loved to be loved, yes. That's
so.
True. Okay.
And then the third thing that I wanted to talk about was your experience with Bertram helping to integrate the downtown restaurants.
Okay. Well, it was in 1950 before we married. We were dating, and he told me he had a surprise and
he
didn't tell me what the surprise was. And we went downtown to Kansas Avenue, which is the main downtown street of Topeka, and parked the car in the 600 block, or I believe it was the 600 block. The creamery's gone now. Anyway, he opened the door, and we started to go in, and I stopped and said, "I'm not going in there."
Because it was a segregated.
Because it
weren't.
Was a white restaurant. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Now, you are going in there. Don't embarrass me. Let's go." So I went in, and we sat down. And I was very, very nervous and upset. But I tried to do what he asked, and they did serve us. He knew, the cook there was a man by the name of Coleman Kirkdall. And Coleman had told him, "Well, just come on in, see if they will serve you." He said, "I'm the main cook. If they don't serve you, I'm going out the back door. They'll not have a cook for the rest of the evening." And they did serve us. We had a nice dinner. And as I'm saying, I didn't enjoy it because I was too nervous to enjoy it, because I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. And then someone got word to us that they thought if we went to the ranch house, which was on 6th and Gage, that they would serve us there. We went, they served us, and then in that case, we told our friends, and I had forgotten it, but Joe reminded me the other night that we had taken he and Nathla with us when we went out the next time. And also, there was another place in the Jayhawk Hotel. It was called the Purple Cow. And we heard that we could go there. I don't know who your father talked to, but he talked to some people. And we went there, and they served us. And then we told everybody else about it. And gradually, now not those three restaurants we could go to. And gradually the restaurants opened. I think it's interesting that the one that would not serve blacks was the Jolly Cafe, which was run by Chinese. They never, ever opened to blacks. They simply closed their doors and went out of business. They never, ever served blacks. But now, I hadn't thought about that in years, because we can go to, you know, to mm-hmm. any restaurant, do anything we want to do. So we did integrate the restaurants there in Topeka.
So when you were doing that, either you two alone or with Nathla and Joe, what were the other people around you doing, the other customers at the restaurant?
Well,
or the waiter, even?
Looking at us, and when we went to the creamery, most of the blacks were in the kitchen, and everybody was in the door looking at us. All the kitchen staff.
I can't believe they're here.
So it was interesting, but like I say, it's we did open the restaurants there in Topeka.
So was it posted that, how did you know it was segregated still? Was it something that was just a remnant of how
no,
people
it's just,
or was it posted
no,
somewhere?
No, it really wasn't posted now. But if you went in and you weren't supposed to be served, they would tell you, "We don't serve blacks here." Or they didn't say blacks, they said Negroes. We don't serve in those days. We don't serve you. Well, I can tell an incident of where my mother
I was going to ask you to tell my
next. We had gone to Kansas City, and we were on our way home, and we were hungry. And it was late, and there weren't a lot of restaurants open. And so we stopped at this one restaurant, and she went in. We all stayed in the car. And when she came out, now they did put it in a sack, but a lot of them wouldn't even do that. They just would not serve you. She went in, and someone, the proprietor, whoever, told her, "We don't serve blacks here." And she told him, "I don't blame you. I wouldn't either. I'll have such and such and such a thing." And so they did serve her and was to go. Now, I know in the South that they had a lot of signs that said, you know, blacks not served here or in the rear or something like that. But in Topeka, it was not like that. The signs weren't there particularly, but you just knew that you weren't supposed to go in. And if you did and you weren't supposed to go in, they wouldn't serve you. That's all there was to that.
So did you ever ask your husband, what gave you the idea to just start, or gave him the idea?
I think Coleman did. I think Coleman told him, "You come, and if they don't serve you, I'm going to go out the back door, and they won't be serving anybody because he was the only cook." So I don't know whether he had talked to the owner ahead of time. I'm assuming he probably did. But we never did really discuss that. But I'm sure that this is why we did go, was because Coleman had told him to come in and see if they would serve us, and they did.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, all right.
And, you know, as somebody who was born in 1970, I didn't have to worry about,
well, that's true.
You know, any
that's
of
true.
That stuff.
By the time you came along, it was a different story.
Well, I had another question, if it's okay about
that. Fine with me.
So you mentioned with Brown versus the Board of Education, you had no idea that you were making history as you were doing it.
Yeah.
With your husband going into the restaurants in downtown Topeka, did you have the sense that you were making history a little bit?
No, and I still don't feel that because most people have no idea how the restaurants were opened. No, they don't. I don't talk about it.
Just they got word.
They just got word
that
it was okay to go. I don't think they had any idea that my husband and I are the ones that went first, and you know, and so as a test case, so to speak. And so, I definitely didn't have a sense of history there. I just, even though I was grown, it just never crossed my mind.
In talking about it now, do you feel like you made history?
Well, I know I made history when I talk about it now, because there was, like I say, there was a time when you couldn't go, and now you don't think anything about it. You know, you couldn't stay in hotels, you couldn't go to restaurants, you couldn't do hardly anything. Now, one of the things, there's good and bad about all things. Segregation had its good points in that it takes a village to raise a child. Well, when I was coming along, that village was your relatives, your teachers, your church, whatever. I can remember I could do something that I wasn't supposed to do, and by the time I got home, my mother knew about it. I mean, you know, it just, the closeness that we had. When we went to a convention, for instance, I was a teenager when we went
to church convention.
We went to Washington, D.C. We stayed in the homes of other blacks because we couldn't stay at the hotels. And you made close friends. The lady that kept us, I wrote to her for years, you know. It just was, there was a closeness that we don't have now. That's all I can say about that.
I can agree with that. I experienced a little bit of it just because you still have a lot of friends in Topeka, and I can remember when I first started learning how to drive, my brother, who's 13 years older, took me out to practice, and somebody got back to you that they saw me with boy in the car. And I almost got in trouble before the whole situation was. So I always felt like I was being watched.
You were.
By black people in Topeka.
You were. And that's not a bad thing, because that closeness is not there now. And so many of the kids get into trouble because their parents have no idea what they're doing and all. Like I say, there's good and bad in most things, and that was the good in that you were in a community and they kind of surrounded you.
Mm-hmm. I can agree with that. Well, now, I know we don't have a lot of time left, so I'll skip some of my questions, but I have to ask you, in light of everything we've been talking about, what you were thinking when you found out that I was planning to marry a white man, which I did. I mean, what did you think it was going to be like for us?
I didn't think anything about it. I expected it. You were different from your, as you know, Jancy was, 17 years older, Garland was 13 years older, and Pam was 9, mm-hmm. or 8 and a half when you were born. And I raised them entirely different from what I raised you, because they came along when we still were pretty segregated. By the time you came along, we were not. And you always were very cosmopolitan.
I am my father.
You are your father, and it was just people to you. If you would say about a certain friend, and I would say, are they black or white? And you would say, Mama, they're black or they're white. But what difference does it make? They're my friends. And so, you know, you looked at things differently. And that's the reason that I was willing to send you to Spelman, was because Yvonne, you know, Jance's sister, was what she was counselor at Sumner. Mm-hmm. And before she talked to me, I wouldn't have considered sending you to a black school. I was being prejudiced, I guess. I didn't feel like they were that good. But she said to me, especially Spelman, she says, it's an excellent school. She'll get a good education. And she will, when she graduates, by that time, she will know who she is, because right now she does not. Now that's what she said. So, but you were always, the people were just people to you. So I know that you, well, I just wasn't surprised that you married Matt when you did.
Oh, so you didn't, I know that your friends have commented that we go out and we're awfully social for a mixed couple.
Yes,
and
you are.
It surprises them. Because in your day, if somebody did, well, it wasn't legal, but if somebody was even together romantically, they wouldn't let people know.
Yes, and if it had been earlier, I would have had more to say about it, because I would have felt like that marriage in itself is a hard road to hoe, you know, and you really have to be dedicated for it to last and for it to take. And that just added, you married out of your race, it simply added more to it. I'd have had more to say, but I was okay with you marrying Matt, because I felt like things had changed enough that it probably would work out okay, and it has. And yes, usually when you do that, when you marry out of your race, you are isolated. Marcia's a good example of that, you know, when she married Robert. And she to this day is isolated. Yeah, it's a cousin that we have that married out of her race. But
she's 50. She's almost 60, isn't she?
Yes, she is 60. She is 60. Okay. So it makes a difference that it when they married, it was mm-hmm. a different time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, since we have only a couple of minutes left, is there anything that you want to say to Augie, who is Matt's and my child, or to Adrian and Ariana, who are my sister's children with her husband, who's from Nigeria?
Yeah, well, I want to say that always love your family, because your family will take care of you when nobody else will. You may fall out with your family, but you always make it up again. You don't stay angry, because they will do for you when no one else will. Also, my mother's saying was, and that's for you and everybody else, for my grandchildren and for my children, is that, it's gone out of my head just like that.
Your mother used to say,
you can be content with anything, with whatever happens to you in life. You can make yourself content. It's all left up to you.
Well, thank you. And thank you for doing this with me, because I know you didn't want to.
No, I didn't.
I just want to say thank you and that I love you.
I love you too. That's why I did it.
We have just about 2 minutes left, and I had another question.
Okay.
Or two, and I'm wondering, Chandra, what have you learned from your mother and from your father and from this Topeka heritage?
Well, you know, really not a lot, because I didn't really appreciate it until I was a grown person. I guess what I appreciate most is, you know, you always take your parents for granted, no matter who you are and no matter who they are. You never really know everything that they go through to make sure that you're healthy and happy. And but, you know, in this case, when I look back at all the things that they took part in and all the things that they did to change society so that I could grow up being, you know, the flighty, free-spirited, everybody's the person that I am, I have more appreciation than just, you know, the day-to-day stuff that they did. They, you know, fed me and they were nice to me. And, you know, I have even more appreciation because they were doing a lot more than that before I even got here behind the scenes that changed the quality of my life as a Black person and not just as a person growing up.
Yeah, we moved to a white neighborhood where we were the only Black family there. And it made for a difference with you children, especially in school and things like that. Garland did all right with it, but he was one of the first ones, and he was a little unhappy behind it, you know. So,
Whereas I didn't give it a second thought.
No, you didn't, but he did.
And I'm wondering, too, Nadine, is if in talking about all this history and this history that you helped make and in the civil rights movement in our country, is what is it like when you look at your daughter across the table and talk about your past and your history and see your daughter and your grandchildren and the future they have?
Well, I feel like that I have made some things possible for her to have the life that she has had. And I feel like as time goes on, America probably will get where it's supposed to go. I think that we will, one of these days, be truly integrated. And I don't know that it's going to be in your lifetime or even Augie's lifetime, but I do feel that we are going to get there.
Well, now I feel like, you know, when you always used to ask if somebody was Black or white, and I would think, you know, I might have brushed you off, but I still notice. Like, I notice mixed couples in the grocery store. I notice things, you know, and I guess people in your generation would have disapproved. I just notice. But I think maybe by the time Augie grows up, won't even be a blip on his radar, because he's probably 2.
Yeah.
So, but I see it and I notice it, whereas I think people younger than me don't even notice.
Yeah.
Anything else you wanted to share today before we close?
I think I'm done.
Yeah, I think I am too.
Well, are you glad you did it?
Yes, I am. I'm glad I did it.
Your children are very wise, Nadine.
Yes, I do know. I'm proud of my children.